an already weak holiday sales period. Japanese drug maker Eisai will pay $3.9 billion to acquire U.S. biopharmaceutical firm MGI Pharma. It's the largest overseas acquisition ever by a Japanese drug company. Swiss pharmaceutical giant Novartis says it's paring away mid-management jobs in a cost-cutting effort aimed at improving its competitiveness against rivals producing generic drugs. Light sweet crude oil is trading up $2.16 at $90.02 a barrel. Gold is up $3.60 at $817 an ounce. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended down 295 points at 13,431. The NASDAQ was down 67 points at 2,652. And the S&P 500 was down 38 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. As I stare at my Hanukkah candles lit, all of them tonight for the eighth night of Hanukkah, I recognize that a small miracle may have just occurred in Congress. Now, a miracle, in my rabbi's definition, and many of you have heard him here on the horn, Rabbi Fellner, he will tell you that miracles are not supernatural. What they are natural occurrences, many times caused by humans, sometimes caused by nature, that just happen to be so unusual and so wonderful that we call them a miracle. The miracle in this case is that the Democrats may not be doing everything the Republicans that want them to do. They may actually be standing up to them. Now, miracles can be reversed. Things can be changed. I don't know that it's going to happen. But I came on air, well, today, really going to rail on the Congress. If you've read my blog post at RadioInsideScoop.com, you'll see that today's show, which I posted last week, is called Please Do Nothing, Congress. Many of you know about Harry Truman's campaign when he railed in 1948 against the Do Nothing Congress, saying, do something, Congress. And at that time, Truman was running against Republican Congress, and the American people rallied and gave him re-election against the Do Nothing Congress. Many of us know that the Republican Congress in 2006 was famously Do Nothing. They spent like a drunken sailor hundreds of billions of dollars, the most big-spending, profligate Congress in American history. But other than that, a few bills trying to harm gay people or give more power to an administration to round up people and hold them without trial, other than that, they really did very little, certainly nothing to protect us from the ongoing energy crisis, nothing to end the war in Iraq, nothing to help ordinary people. Well, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid were determined to change the image of the do-nothing Congress. And so this year, calendar year 2007, is exactly the opposite of the 2006 Congress. Indeed, this Congress, in 1 year, has passed more bills than any other Congress in history. I should say had more roll call votes. That's because many bills have not been passed. Many times Republicans have opposed them. But they've tried. And indeed, they've succeeded on a lot of things, lobbying reform and some others. But my concern with this Congress was that in their zeal to get something done, to be praised as a do-something Congress, that they were bending way too over to accommodate the Republicans. And until this weekend, I was afraid that they were going to do it again. Until this weekend, if you look at the Washington Post this Saturday, for example, Republicans are practically crowing in glee as the Democrats are set to approve more funding for the war in Iraq without limitations, without preconditions. Why? Because George Bush said he wouldn't sign any other bill. He's just not going to sign anything. He's not going to provide for any domestic programs, period. He will, in effect, shut the government down. No new spending, Congress. No new spending for education, no more student loans, nothing for health care, certainly not for health care for children. No action on Congressman Barney Frank's terrific bill to help those that are being hurt by subprime mortgages. I'm talking about the homeowners. George Bush's bill protects the investors, as you might imagine, but nothing about the people who are actually losing their homes. Nothing on that. Nothing on the energy bill. Nothing, 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 unless they fund the war in Iraq. So it's very interesting if you read, and I want to refer everyone to a Saturday, December 8th article in the Washington Post, where it says, Hill closed to deal on war funds. Democrats would drop Iraq timeline, the headline says. Again, this is just last Saturday. And here you have the House Majority Leader, number two in the House, Steny Hoyer, saying, look, you know, we'll get about $11 billion more in domestic spending than Bush has requested, and some drought relief for the Southeast, and the legislation, the good legislation, to address the mortgage subprime crisis. And so we'll give the president money for Iraq. This is how it's going to work, they said. We won't give them the money right away. We'll vote for $30 billion for the war in Afghanistan, which virtually every American supports. And then it'll go to the Senate. And the Senate is going to refuse to pass that bill. They're going to filibuster it. The Republicans are going to refuse to cut off funding for the war in Iraq. And then when they refuse, the Senate will then add $70 billion more for Iraq, more to do that fruitless war, which just leads to deaths of Americans and deaths of Iraqis and cheaper oil for the oil companies. In fact, in the end, they'll actually give Iraq, the Iraqi war, $70 billion, $20 billion more than the House Democrats had initially proposed. Bush wants $196 billion. And whose grand idea was this Democratic plan? The idea that they wouldn't vote for the Iraq bill on the outset, but then the Senate would refuse, they'd filibuster, and then they'd have to back into supporting, giving more money to the Bush war. Whose idea was this? This brilliant Democratic idea? Why, none other than the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell. That was his idea, and there's a big picture of him smiling on Saturday with the caption, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was the first to suggest to Hill Democrats the outlines of the pending deal on war funds for Iraq. And then Bush would sign the other 11 remaining appropriations bill for fiscal 2008, and the government would run on time. Otherwise, Bush says, let the government collapse. Let it fall apart. Don't provide anything for post offices and parks and education and, well, anything else the government provides for. But this way, the Democrats won't be blamed for the collapse of the government, you see. They don't want to be blamed. They want to do their work on time. And if Bush is going to veto everything, well, they'll just give in. The article said that Pelosi was uncommitted. This is, again, an article of last Saturday. Republican leaders, the article says, were badly divided on the plan. McConnell presented the proposal to Bush. He seemed to go along. But the House minority leaders, the Republican leaders, they said the president should reject it. They said he could still veto all the popular legislation like that expanding the state children's health insurance program, funding increases for health care, funding increases for education. He could still veto it all because, as number two Republican in the House said, Roy Blunt, quote, there's no reason to make a bad bargain. The president holds all the cards. Blunt said that Democrats will give in on war funding with or without additional money for domestic programs. He argued the deal was bad for Republicans. Don't agree to $11 billion more for domestic programs in exchange for $70 billion more on Iraq. That's not a good deal. We can deny them the domestic spending, still make sure children don't have health care in America, and fund the president's priorities, and still keep Halliburton and the oil companies and everyone happy. Behind closed doors, the article says, McConnell expressed confidence in the Republican negotiating position, telling his Republican colleagues that by holding firm, they'd already moved from a Democratic offer of no money for the war to at least $30 billion. We're just going to sit right here, McConnell told Senate Republicans of his negotiation strategy. We'll just wait. As one Republican aide put it, the Democrats made a bargaining mistake last month when Reid signaled that the Democrats are going to have their initial request of $22 billion for domestic programs, and they'll accept 11. Well, if the Democrats will go down from 22 to 11, they'll probably just go down to zero, the Republicans said. And, well, Hoyer, Steny Hoyer said, number two Democrat, you know, we have to get to a point where the American public more clearly perceives our policy position and is not confused by whether or not the Democrats intend to support the troops we've sent to Iraq. I don't think there's an option on that. So going in to this weekend, when I wrote the blog piece, when I prepared today's show, as I went through all the bills that we needed to pass, everything from an energy bill that I want to talk about to a bill on the automatic minimum tax, that's very important to talk about, the alternative minimum tax, earmarks, all of this stuff. And I was going to rail on the Democrats for once again giving in, for once again allowing the Republicans to set the agenda even when they're in control. But you know what? Looks like the Republicans went too far. In today's Washington Post, the House Appropriations Committee Chairman, David Obey, stood up for the Democrats. Still not clear where Nancy Pelosi will be, but he disagreed with Hoyer. What he said is, look, if you won't give us the $11 billion in extra spending, here's what we're going to do. We'll give you the basic spending. We can't increase the domestic programs, obviously, unless Bush signs on, and he's already refused. So, okay, we won't give the extra for domestic programs, but we won't give a penny for Iraq. And we're going to strip money from the Bush administration's priorities. Looks like funding for absence education is going way down, folks. And all those earmarks that Republicans love, 9,500 earmarks, a total of $9.5 billion, everything from, oh, $400,000 for a celebration of Abraham Lincoln that's going to be in Ray LaHood's district to who knows what. You know, earmarks have included in the past things like rainforest in Iowa. All that's going to go. See, the Democrats don't have power to force the president to accept new spending, but they do have power to cut back on spending. See, that's the power of Congress. They can't force the president to accept spending. He can veto that, but they can cut back on spending. So they're going to cut back on all the Republican priorities. Way to go, Obey. No more earmarks for you, my friends. No more pet projects for all your contributors. We're not paying for this war in Iraq. And if you won't give us the domestic programs, sorry, no earmarks for you. As I said, Congressman Ray LaHood, Republican of Illinois, was complaining he needs $400,000 for the Abraham Lincoln Bicentennial Celebration. Well, Ray LaHood, maybe you should be willing to compromise on Iraq, and you'll get your $400,000 for Abe Lincoln. I'm sure Abe Lincoln will survive without you. And maybe the people, good people of Illinois can come up with the money. Robert Byrd, Senator of West Virginia, Democrat, someone who often drives me crazy. Oftentimes I disagree with him. But when it comes to fiscal responsibility and earmarks, he's one of the worst. And yet, he was right on target yesterday when he said, quote, it is extraordinary. The president would request an 11% increase for the Department of Defense, a 12% increase in foreign aid, $195 billion in emergency funding for the war, while saying that a 4.7% increase in domestic programs is irresponsible. That's right, my friends. A small miracle occurred on this eighth night of Hanukkah. A very small miracle. Some Democrats, maybe even the majority, are fighting back. If George Bush won't play ball, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are finally understanding they should just go home and not play at all and let the American people blame who they want to. But maybe, just maybe, with the help of the Horn and other progressive media, people will understand who's really at fault. When we come back, I want to talk about the various bills that the Democrats are trying to pass, whether they'll hold up with their no more money for Iraq, and if you have any questions on the legislative process, that is my bailiwick. It's the thing I know best. I was in the middle of it. Give me a call. Let me know what you think. Ask me your questions. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is Billy.
Join us this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Fox Stuff, where you'll hear a hot new Christmas anti-war song by one of the most successful artists of our time. But there's one hitch. He doesn't sing his own song. So tune in this Thursday, midnight Eastern, to Foxed Up for all the answers and to hear Christmas in Fallujah. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Will the Democrats get cojones? I don't know. It would be a minor miracle if they did. But good for Congressman David Obey, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, who said, quote, "I am not interested in trading $70 billion for Iraq for table scraps on the domestic side." They were all ready to vote today to give money to every federal agency except the Pentagon to fund the government, which, after all, will be shut down if Congress and the president, Democrats, Republicans, don't come to an agreement. And the Democrats finally played chicken and said, all right, we can't force you to accept new spending. That's true. But we just won't provide the spending that you want. We know you love earmarks, Republicans. We know that every time one of your contributors gives you $10,000, you want to give them $1 million back from taxpayer dollars. Sorry, No more pet projects. No more earmarks. You just don't like our spending. No more spending for you. Will it last? It's hard to know. After all, there are plenty of Democrats that like spending on earmarks as well. The same Senator, Robert Byrd, who rightly complains that the president wants 12% for foreign aid and 11% for the Defense Department and $196 billion for Iraq, while only 4.7% for domestic programs, is the same senator that has his own pet projects. Seems like every library or statute in West Virginia is named for Robert Byrd. So will they back down? It's not clear, but I'll tell you one thing that is clear. The Republicans are coming around. 1 hour ago, the Associated Press reported that the leading Republican in the House, John Boehner of Ohio, said, well, we got to have $7.4 billion of the $11 billion. We got to have at least that two-thirds. That's our pet projects. That's our earmarks. We got to have those. I mean, we got to have, you know, border security and money for farmers that need drought relief. And, well, of course, more money for State Department operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, and there is a bridge. And political conventions, got to fund those. Juanita from Florida, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello there. I called to see if you were live because I was
I am live.
Good news, and I thought, oh, I hope it's so.
It may not last, Juanita. You know, I'm kind of want to report it now before it all dies because Boehner, the Republican leader, says, look, we'll, because he really wants these earmarks. So he's going to say, we'll pass the earmarks without Iraq, and then he's going to go by the old idea. They'll try to do it in the Senate. The Republicans will filibuster, and then they'll try to put the Iraq money in the Senate bill. And it'll be up to the House to say no again. And they think, well, it'll get close to Christmas, and the government will shut down. The Democrats won't dare say no. They'll have to pass it. I still think that's the Republican plan. But
yep.
At least here's a start. Here's a hope. You know, way to go, David Obey, finally.
Right. That's what I'm hoping. And I thought, oh, I hope this is a live show.
It is a live show. But I'll tell you, these things can change daily. I mean, as I said,
I
Saturday they were ready to cave in. Monday, yesterday, Obey seemed to reign supreme. And then already today, we have Republicans backing down, at least on some of the domestic stuff. The real fight, though, is obviously going to be on Iraq. That's the real fight.
Oh, yeah.
And Democrats feel that Americans, the majority of Americans, want them to fund some of this. And they can't. The Democrats fear that they'll be blamed for not supporting the troops.
Please, please, stop it.
That's what they're afraid of. And the Republicans are very good with that line. And so we're going to have to see. That's why we have to really stand firm and tell our Democratic representatives.
Miniature, give me liberty or give me death, in a way. You know, in a miniature sort of a way.
You mean the fact that they're backing down?
No, if a, you know, not to back down. I mean, yeah, well, either way. But, I mean, you know, stand up for what's right, no matter if you do get blamed.
Yeah.
That's what.
Well, I think they should be willing to shut the government down.
Yeah,
I think
right.
They should be willing to say to Bush, if you're saying you won't support any spending for the government unless we give you money for Iraq,
mm-hmm.
then shut the government down, and
right.
we'll see who's to blame. Now, this happened, you may remember, back in 95, 96, with Bill Clinton.
Right, and that's when Clinton's numbers soared.
That's true. Now that you can argue it goes either way. You could say,
sure.
See, when the Democrats fight, their numbers soar, and therefore that's the lesson to be learned. Some people will learn the opposite lesson. Some people will say, when Congress fights with the president, the president's numbers soar. So people don't really know what to think about that Bill Clinton example. But I think America's tired of Iraq. I really do. I know I am. It's hard, though, because most people will tell you, if you do polls, the majority of Americans want to withdraw the troops in an orderly fashion from Iraq. I mean, people understand you can't just sort of turn around and run because people will shoot at your back. And I get that, too. The problem is that in order to do that, you need to provide funding with limitations. And that's what the Democrats passed every few months, and that's what Bush vetoes every few months.
Uh-huh.
The idea that funding to bring the troops out. So really the only weapon they have is this really blunt instrument of cutting off funding. And then you get back to the game of chicken with Bush saying, well, if you cut off funding, then our troops will just be there without food and water and they'll just die, right? And the Democrats saying, we're not cutting off funding. We'll give you funding to get them out of there, but you got to sign our bill.
Yeah.
So we're going to get back to that chicken game, and I hope the Democrats stand firm. I do too.
Definitely.
We'll see.
Right.
We'll see.
Okay,
so any last comment you want to make?
What?
Any last comment you want to make?
No, I just wanted to be sure I heard something that was happening today.
You did. It is happening today, but I have to tell you, it's a very fluid situation.
Uh-huh.
And it's still quite possible.
Yeah.
It's still quite possible that they're going to back down. I don't think they're going to back down with the House bill. But what's going to happen is it's going to go to the Senate. They're going to try to pass the good bill, the one that brings them home from Iraq. The Republicans are going to filibuster it.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's when the crucial part happens. That's when Reid has to stand firm and say, if you won't pass my bill, I won't pass your bill.
Is there any way that the Democrats could bring this information to the public so more people would understand what they're trying to do?
I'm trying, Juanita. Get the horn on air in Florida.
Bless
down
your
there.
Heart.
I mean, what we got, like seven of us at the horn? I mean, maybe 10. We're trying. But that's the problem. Our megaphone is much, much smaller than the Fox propaganda channel.
And
the Democratic Party, to their discredit, has not been sponsoring progressive talk radio the way the Republican Party has. So I would ask that when you...
I would like to tell you something that I heard today that's sort of interesting. It came just to my mind is I have a friend who's a right-winger, and we were talking today, and she's... you know who's winning her over in a small way is Schwarzenegger's wife. And she said,
really?
I've heard all
Maria
these
Shriver.
Terrible, she said, I've heard all these terrible things about the Kennedys. And she said, now I'm beginning to wonder about it. And I said,
interesting.
Well,
what did Maria Shriver say that made your white right-wing friend turn her head around and think about something else?
Well,
you remember?
It was something to do with her Maria's mother being on there, and it just came together for her some way. It
wasn't about a specific issue.
That doesn't mean she's going to be a Democrat, but that was coming around for her, believe me.
And wow, a Democrat could actually care about her own mother. Wow.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe they are people, too. Well, you know, I guess we could count that as progress.
we have
a little ways to go, though.
Oh, yeah, they think we're these monsters, you know, that don't believe in God or anything, and some of us don't, but... You know, we're all human, and we're all different. We have variety.
Do they believe in humanity? For all the people who are checking in my, you know, looking in my window to see whether I'm praying, do they care about humanity? I mean, while they're checking to see if we're praying for God, their own children are dying for lack of health care.
Yeah.
Right? While they're protecting every fetus in America... They're saying, we don't care if kids get a decent education or health care, or we don't care if the homeless have houses. Whose side is Jesus on? I mean, see, that's the thing. Look, I firmly believe in the right of atheists and secular people to believe whatever they want to believe. I believe in a firm separation of church and state. But I am not afraid to go Bible to Bible, Testament to Testament, old or new, with any of these right-wing fundamentalists, because I'll tell you something, Jesus didn't care about a capital gain tax cut. It's nowhere in any of the Gospels, I assure you.
Right.
It's not there. And subsidies for oil companies, it's not there either.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about caring for the poor and housing the homeless, and the least shall be the most, and it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven.
Right.
These Christian fundamentalists are abandoning their own Messiah. Their own God.
Of course, but you're absolutely right. And you know it. And
frankly, if they were atheists, they'd have a better argument with me.
Oh, yeah.
But they claim to be Christian.
I think God has more respect for atheists than he does for... for...
Well, certainly for an atheist that cares for his or her fellow human being. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Hey, Juanita, thanks for your call. I hope you call in again sometime.
Thank you.
And by the way, let me just announce while I've got this opportunity, so Juanita can call back then as well. We've got a special show at 11 o'clock tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern. That's 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 a.m. for you early risers on the Pacific Coast. We're going to talk about guns because of the mall shooting in Omaha, and then, of course, at the church, the two church, really, the missionary and the church in Denver and in Colorado Springs. We're going to talk about gun control, and I have got the biggest gun nut imaginable, a man by the name of Larry Pratt, the executive director of the Gun Owners for America. Satan himself is coming on my show, along with a really good guy, Brian Siebel. He's he's with the Legal Action Project of the Brady Campaign to Stop Gun Violence. And we're going to be on local radio in Washington, D.C., and if you're going to call in, you got to stand in line because we get lots and lots of calls when I'm on local radio, just one right after the other. But I wanted to make sure that Horn listeners have a chance to participate as well. So my toll-free number will be working 888-488-MARK, 11 a.m. live. You can just go right to the Horn website or to my website, radioinsidescoop.com, and click Listen Live, and you can hear that show on local Washington radio. We're going to talk about all the ins and outs of gun control, and you can mix it up with some of my local Washington, D.C. listeners. So I hope you'll tune in for that. When I come back, though, I want to go back to what's going on in Congress, because there's two bills that are very interesting and talk about the future, I think, of the Republican and Democratic parties. One's on energy, and the other is on the alternative minimum tax. And it may sound dry, folks, but this is very important stuff, and I'll give you all the details when we come back. You want to call in? 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. Right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective... Be practical. Get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Last week, the Supreme Court heard a case on the rights of detainees in Guantanamo and the fairness of the military commissions down there, those kangaroo courts that Bush has set up. In making their decision, the justices might want to consider the views of the former chief prosecutor there, Morris Davis. Said Davis, "It's absolutely critical to the legitimacy of the military commissions that they be conducted in an atmosphere of honesty and impartiality." But they aren't living up to that obligation, he said, so he resigned. Meddling by Bush administration appointees, he added, perpetuates the perception of a rigged process stacked against the accused, he told the LA Times. Of course, it's been stacked since the get-go. The accused can be tried with secret testimony and with testimony extracted by coercion. Davis, who resigned on October 4th, tried to rule the latter out of order. He instructed prosecutors to not offer any evidence derived by waterboarding. But guess what? He was overruled by a senior commanding officer. Now, the Supreme Court already decided in its Hamden case 2 years ago that detainees in Guantanamo have the protection of the Geneva Conventions, which guarantee a fair trial. Now even the chief prosecutor admits that the trials down there aren't fair. That should be all the testimony the court needs to outlaw the Military Commissions Act, which, like Guantanamo itself, is a blot on our reputation. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today I want to give you a lot of good inside the Beltway information. Congress is rushing to beat the Christmas deadline. And if you've ever rushed to beat a deadline, or your children have at school, you know how it works. You do nothing, you do nothing, you do nothing, you enjoy the day. Ah, the deadline's around the corner. Quick, quick, get it all done. But really, it's just about differences of views, differences of how to govern America. And it's those differences I want to talk about, because they're trying to negotiate. And I understand that there has to be some legislative give and take. I get that, okay? I am not one of those people that says, if you don't get 100% of what you want, you know, quit and go home. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the Democrats aren't even getting 30% of what they want. Bush has said, I want Iraq without preconditions. And the Democrats, well, I'm afraid they're going to cave. And here's the thing. There are other things, important things that Democrats want. But don't attach them to Iraq. I'll give you an example. The House passed, for the first time, a bill that's been needed ever since Matthew Shepard was crucified on a Wyoming post and left out to die in the cold. They need a good hate crimes bill, and they passed one. The Senate, of course, filibustered. George Bush, of course, threatened to veto it. So they thought they'd connect it to the must-pass bill, to the Iraq bill. Well, I get that. I understand that George Bush will sign anything with Iraq's name on it. But you're putting liberal representatives in an impossible position. They have to vote for Iraq in order to stop hate crimes? Come on. And I'm very glad that it was decoupled from that. And yet, now I'm afraid they'll pass Iraq and not pass hate crimes. Two other bills in the Senate I want to talk about real quick. Well, three, actually. One real quick is the subprime lending. You know, George Bush has a plan to help out investors. You see, if you make hundreds of millions of dollars and you invested a lot of money in the subprime mortgage market, well, you lost your shirt, and he wants to protect you. After all, those Wall Street clubs are expensive, and those three Parkside apartments in Manhattan, well, they're not cheap. And, well, you know, how are you going to fund your fleet of Rolls Royces? Yes, for rich investors who happen to invest in the subprime market, George Bush has a bailout bill for you. But if you happen to lose your home due to the fact that the lenders kept coming after you and saying, hey, equity now, and then the interest rates changed and they took your APR up from 5% or 4% to 12% or 16%, whatever it is, and you couldn't pay it and you lost your house, well, you should just suffer. Rich people should be protected from the consequences of their bad investments, and poor people should lose their homes because they were trying to use their home equity to, well, to eat. Or maybe to provide for their children's education. Well, Barney Frank has a bill to change that. It's a good bill. It's a solid bill. No wonder the Republicans are trying to link it to Iraq. It would help the home owners rather than the investors. What a crazy idea. Two more things, and I want to get to Susan from Oregon because I know she's holding on. And I'll give you all the details in a bit. But the two big bills that I'm actually very proud of. One is the energy bill, a Democratic energy bill, a bill that cuts back on tax breaks for oil companies, raises fuel efficiency standards for the first time since the 1970s, by 40%, which is significant, and requires that utilities use 15% of their energy in solar and wind resources, renewable energy resources. I'll talk about the prospects for that bill, and also about the alternative minimum tax, an obscure thing perhaps, the AMT, but something that hits upper middle class taxpayers harder and harder. The Democrats want to fix it without increasing the national debt. They want to do so by taxing fund managers, extremely rich hedge fund managers on Wall Street. The Republicans insist that the hedge fund managers keep their tax break and the upper middle class get their tax break too, and that way the debt can just be passed on to future generations. Susan from Oregon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, hello.
About your first subject, you just made my day.
I made your day, but we may lose this miracle. I don't want to promise
the
miracle
because
it may go away.
I understand that. That's why I immediately got on the phone and called Washington, and I heard
good for you.
Do the same thing.
I'm going to throw out the number for all of you got pens near you. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That is the number of both your member of the House and your senator. And if you don't know who your congressperson is, that's fine. Tell them where you're from, and they'll look it up for you. Don't anyone tell me they don't have the phone number. Because you're right. We have. I'm glad
call
you called.
Them. And
they have to stand firm here.
Yeah, and tell them. You're behind them. I called them and told them, if you need to, shut the stupid government down. And this would really hurt me because we live on Social Security. So shut it down anyway.
You know what? They'll never stop Social Security checks.
Oh, no, they won't. But that,
the Republicans wouldn't dare do that. If they had to, they'd get a little emergency bill in just to protect Social Security because you'd have, millions of angry seniors marching on the White House quicker than you can say no Social Security. They wouldn't dare do that.
They wouldn't dare do that. But they need to know that the Democrats are willing to shut the entire government down. It's like, pardon the football reference, it's like trying to play pro football when you're only allowed to run.
Yep. Yep. We're willing to pass the ball.
Well, go home.
Well, and that's the point. And that's why Obie finally... Finally, sometimes you lose when you're doing with legislation, you lose the forest because you're staring at this tree and that tree and this tree and trying to put it all together, and you're trying to make a deal. And I know the Democrats want to make a deal. They want these appropriations bill to pass. But finally, Obie just said, you know what? I quit. I'm taking my ball. I'm going home. You don't want us to spend on health care. You don't want us to spend on education. You don't want us to spend to help out poor people who've lost their homes. Well, then you can't have your earmarks. You can't have your pet projects. You can't have money for your, the people who give you money for your campaign. Sorry. And now the Republicans are backing down. These Republicans that in the Saturday article, they're glowing, they're confident. Mitch McConnell's plan is going to go through. They're laughing. They're even telling the Washington Post how the Democrats made a mistake and negotiated against themselves. All this glee, they don't look so happy anymore. They look kind of glum. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, sure, good thing.
But listen, it can still change. And that's why you did a great thing, Susan. And I want to encourage everyone else listening to my voice. And even if you hear this show delayed or on podcast, there's still time way up until it happens to call in. If it's a Democrat, tell them to stand firm. No money for the Iraq war. Stand firm, even if you have to shut down the government. We'd rather you do nothing than do the wrong thing. That's the main thing you have to tell them. We'd rather you do nothing, go home for Christmas, than to do the wrong thing. And if it's Republican, tell them to stop being obstructionists, to stop filibustering, and to let the will of the people have their way.
Yeah, and don't just call them once. I called them today. I will be calling them tomorrow as well. Right up until
you.
They vote.
And email works too. The Republicans, back when they were in charge, we're constantly complaining about Democrat obstructionists. We just want an up or down vote, they said. Well, we have to tell our senators that. If you have a Republican senator, tell them we want an up or down vote. Stop filibustering. Won't work, but hey, you can try.
Anyway.
Here's the thing. As long as the Democrats stand firm, then we can have a decent negotiation session, you know?
Yeah.
But, and we'll see. I'll tell you, I was all ready to rail on them today, and I may have to rail on them in 2 weeks. But for now, my hero is David Obey.
Knock on wood. I've got to call Obey's office, too. I'm not in his district.
Yeah, thank him, because he's under a lot of pressure right now. Thanks for your call, Susan.
You have a nice day.
You too. I want to talk a little more in detail before we close about the AMT bill and the energy bill. Let me start with the AMT bill. You may or may not know what the alternative minimum tax is. It began in I believe, the 1980s. It's been around about 20 years. With the idea that there are some rich people that have so many loopholes in their taxes that they pay less taxes than poor people. And, you know, it's not just the mortgage interest deduction, but all kinds of business deductions. There's, you know, there was deductions for meals and everything like that. And so the idea was that, hey, they have to pay some kind of minimum tax, even if they could use all these loopholes. And that was the AMT, the alternative minimum tax. And it actually worked pretty well. The problem is that because it wasn't indexed for inflation, more and more, let's call them upper middle class people, and a few middle class people, started paying the AMT. Now, 85% of the people who pay it earn over $100,000 a year. So we're not talking about middle class people, but upper middle class people, you know, the upper end of the middle class. And they were arguing for a fix. And the Democrats said, we support a fix. We support a fix in the AMT. But we believe in fiscal responsibility. We, unlike the Republicans, don't believe in massive debts to fund everything. We say pay as you go. You want a program? You pay for it. You want a tax cut? You pay for it. And the Democrats found a way to pay for it. Indeed, they found a bigger way to pay for it. The AMT would just cost $50 billion. They found a way to save $73 billion. And it's all on people earning hundreds of millions of a year. There's a provision in the tax code, there's an exception, there's a loophole, for something called carried interest, which is a very obscure provision, but basically it means that if you're a hedge fund manager on Wall Street, if you're one of those venture capitalists that has billions of dollars and makes hundreds of millions a year, and you've got interest there, you've got to pay the same interest rate that everyone else does. In other words, when I get interest from my bank account, I pay ordinary income tax on it. Well, they were getting capital gains taxes on it. In other words, they were paying 15% when they would otherwise pay 36%. So a waitress getting $2 on her bank checking account paid a higher rate of interest than the venture fund manager playing with other people's money, making hundreds of millions of dollars. This amount, this savings is so severe, this tax loophole, that in 10 years we could save $73 billion. So Democrats said, great, we'll get rid of the AMT, we'll index it to inflation, we'll make sure it only affects the upper income, but we're going to pay for it by making these hedge fund managers pay the same rate as everybody else. Well, they had a fit. They went up and they lobbied, and they spent tens of millions of dollars lobbying, where they spent maybe $1 million last year. But, you know, $11 million is very little for an entire industry to spend. When each individual is making some hundreds of millions of a year, it's pocket change. Oh, you know, let's not get the seventh yacht this year. We'll have to get six yachts a year, and we'll use one of them to pay off the members of Congress so that we can protect all our yachts. They tried to do it the right way. They went in the Senate. The Republicans filibustered because the Republicans believe in protecting their donors, making hundreds of millions a year. And the Democrats now are starting to back down. They're starting to say, well, you know, we'd like to do a tax increase, or really cutting this tax loophole on these fund managers in order to pay for the AMT fix, but, well, we need the AMT fix, and you Republicans aren't offering us any revenue source, so we'll just put more debt on our youth. They'd stand firm on this, too. You need to call in and urge them and say, you know what? Don't do the AMT. And tell all of America that the Republicans are forcing you to do that tax increase. We wanted to do the AMT. We just wanted to cut the loophole for the hedge managers. How many hedge managers are there? A few thousand? Tens of thousands? Not even. And yes, millions of Americans, 23 million, have to pay this AMT. But let the public know the reason. And you know what? Put it on the tax form. Tell the IRS to put on the tax form. Would you rather not pay this tax and instead have hedge fund managers who are making hundreds of millions of dollars pay the same rate as waitresses? And let them check a little box. The problem is we're unable to sell our story. We're unable to sell the truth. We don't have the media machine. The right wing does. And it hurts. That's why the Democrats may well back down on the AMT. Dave from California, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. I came on a little earlier when you were still on the subject of funding the war, and I think that this has been the answer all along for the Democrats. Most of them say, verbally they talk, that they want to end the occupations in the Middle East. And if they're serious about that, all they've ever had to do is simply not send a bill to fund it. And that's not something that can be vetoed. There is no bill to be vetoed. So
that's exactly right. Anytime they want to stop it, all they have to do is cut it off. Now, to be fair, Dave, it's a blunt instrument. Most Democrats will tell you that they don't want to cut off funding so that you have funding, it's gone. Most of them want to draw down funding in a way that lets people remove the troops safely and things like that. But Bush isn't giving that as an option. They passed bill after bill that does it the right way, and he keeps vetoing it.
Well,
so
they
need to say, Bush, this is the only bill we're passing. If you don't sign it, we'll wait. And if the troops start needing funds, maybe then you'll sign our bill. It's waiting for you. But
they should pass one special bill that would send air transport planes over there to retrieve all the soldiers and Marines.
Well, they've pretty much done that. I mean, those are the bills that Bush has vetoed. There are bills that talk about a drawdown in troops, that talk about getting like 90% of them out within a year, that fund funds to do that. They passed those bills, and Bush just vetoes them. So the answer is, Bush, if you're not going to play ball with us, we won't play ball with you. It takes two to tango, as they say. And the question will be how that's viewed by the American people. I don't mean by you and me, Dave. I mean by the people in the middle who just want this war to end but don't want to abandon our troops. And Bush will argue that if the Democrats do it this way, which I think you're right, it's the only instrument they have, they just don't fund the war, he's going to say, they're leaving our troops there without food and water and body armor. The Democrats will say, we're providing it all to you, but you have to bring them home. And the question will be, in this nasty game of chicken, who the American people fall in line behind. And I don't know the answer to that. I hope it's the Democrats.
I think the cons will grab all the billions and give it to Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, all of those, and let the troops go hungry and say, look what the Democrats did.
Exactly what he'll do. In fact, one of the things the Democrats are pointing out is that if they don't pass this funding bill, the Pentagon is well-funded well through February. So there's not an emergency here. We got a couple months. It doesn't have to all be done by Christmas. Thank you for your call, Dave. I appreciate it. Before we go, one quick mention of the energy bill. And by the way, that's another thing you can call in your member of Congress about. Tell them you think hedge fund chairmen, people making hundreds of millions of dollars, should pay the same rate at least that waitresses pay on their interest. Because one of the things the Republicans were crowing about is that when they back down on this pay-as-you-go, when they back down on funding this tax bill, what's going to happen, the Republicans say with glee? There'll be no more fiscal responsibility. Yay! We're going to have all these earmarks and all these pet projects, and Halliburton will get more, and everything will be just fine and dandy in the old way. And they may be right. That's why the Democrats have to stand firm. It's called pay as you go. You want them to stand firm on that. Finally, briefly, the energy bill. It's a very good bill. Obviously, I wish it would go further, but heck, it's the first bill since the mid-1970s. Remember how big cars were in the mid-1970s? It's the first bill since then to raise fuel efficiency standards. We're never going to be able to escape the Middle East and the effect that that has on us and the terrorism and all of that and war in Iraq unless we get off our addiction to oil. This administration doesn't care. In fact, cares too little about dictatorships in Africa and Asia and elsewhere. We are in the Middle East for oil, and the more we get out of oil, the more we'll finally have security in the United States. So check that energy bill. It's mostly a good thing. Tomorrow, 11 a.m., a debate on gun control. Now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones took a nosedive today on news that the federal government cut a key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point to 4.25%. It's the third cut rate. In 3 months, the prime lending rate is down to 7.25%, the lowest level in 2 years. We'll have the numbers coming up in our business segment. A telephone hotline designed to help over a million subprime borrowers received a record 45,000 calls in 3 days following the president's plan to freeze interest rates on certain subprime loans before scheduled jumps in monthly payments. At least 50 people are dead following two truck bombs that exploded in Algiers today. As many as 177 people were wounded. The UN offices were heavily damaged in the attack. The North African branch of Al-Qaeda claimed responsibility for the bombing. The director of the CIA testified in a congressional hearing today that top levels of the U.S. government approved the waterboarding of a member of Al-Qaeda. A congressional hearing was launched following the destruction of videotapes of terror suspect interrogations. President Bush is calling on Iran to explain why its government had a secretive nuclear weapons program. Bush is pressuring Iran following last week's announcement by the National Intelligence Estimate that Iran had stopped its nuclear weapons program in 2003. Political powers from around the world will be participating in a conference call today to discuss the final text of a third UN resolution imposing sanctions against Iran. A vote on the matter is due.